Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Luke Cutforth, and special guest, Noah Finns, the fifth Sci Guy.
Yay!
Number three.
This week we're talking about vocal variation and homosexual harmonies.
Yeah,
the gay voice.
But first, we have a wee YouTube comment.
Ooh, my favourite.
So this comment is on a clip from our prisons episode, and it says, so many problems created by a one-size-fits-all type of education, medical, and justice systems. And isn't that correct?
Yes, I saw this comment come in, and I thought it was very good.
And also, that's not all. We have a question, so if you're watching or listening, get down to the comments and answer this question. The question is, are you gay? And do you sound gay?
What does that mean?
The boys at my school said I sounded gay.
Well, what does that mean? That is a pretty good question, Noah. So, I mean, before we get into what makes a voice sound gay, we kind of need to understand what makes voices sound different to other voices. Mm. Because the three of us, we are people, as far as I am aware. And, you know, we all talk using the same, you know, kind of apparatus, but our voices are quite different. For example, you've got mine, which is a really smooth, caramelly, kind of sexy affair. You've got Noah's, which is kind of like if a rat was made into a human man. And then there's Luke, which is, you know, like, he's there.
What does that mean?
Well, I didn't want to say looks like a piece of toast that has a voice, but, you know.
A piece of toast that has... Yes, because you're, like, bristly. like, you know how toast you can, like, you could just... The bristles.
You mean crumbs?
Are they crumbs if they're still attached?
No, they're just bread.
It's bread. The bristled bread. The bread that's bristly.
And this is my beard.
Yes, the beard.
My stubble.
I think if toast were to talk, it would sound like you.
What a sentence out of context. I think if toast were to talk, it would sound like you.
Yeah, so we're getting around the point here. What do you think makes voices sound different?
Different tongue sizes, different tongue shapes, different teeth, different vocal cords, different upbringing, people you're around.
Yeah. Yes, those are all factors,
different,
I suppose, in the sound of someone's voice. Yeah,
different age.
Yeah, all of these things have an effect. So
why are you laughing as if I'm wrong?
I'm not laughing as though you're wrong. I'm
you're,
just laughing.
You're saying, haha, no, so stupid.
No, I'm
he
laughing
knows
that
everything.
You, I'm laughing that you went straight to tongues.
Tongue size.
And not just...
Tongue size.
Because you can hear when someone has a big tongue.
I know
when
you can hear when someone has a big tongue, but you gave multiple
tongue
things before getting into anything else.
Do we not speak with our tongues?
Okay, so I'm going to move on. How do you talk? Like, what makes the sound? Like, I'm conveying information to you using my voice, but how am I doing that? What
vibrating.
Is the mechanism there?
You're vibrating your vocal cords.
Exactly, yeah. So you've got your vocal cords, which is these sort of folds in your neck. You pass air through them, they vibrate, and you modify, you know, how that... You modify the sound of that using your mouth, lips, and tongue. You change the size of the sort of space that's... you know, available in your mouth, then it's going to change the sound that's coming out. You change the shape of the opening, it's going to change the sound that's coming out slightly. There are lots of different ways to modify voices, and, you know, there's going to be speech pathologists, people who study sort of the different sort of vocal techniques and things as well. All of these people, linguists too, who are going to be sitting in the comments with so much information.
Cunning ones.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about all of that stuff in a lot of depth because... There's so much. But the basics to understand is that these different sort of factors change how voices sound, you know? The vocal cords, the size of those, the sort of thickness of those will change the sound because, you know, the vibrations, you know, will vibrate the air differently based on the size of that. You know, the amount of space that you've got, or even the amount of space that you make available in your mouth, all of these different resonance points will change the sound that your voice makes. Yeah?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, so what do you think are maybe sort of the biggest determinants of different voices? Like, if we were to draw a line between two different voice types in humanity, what do you think is the biggest difference make?
Length of the vocal cord.
Length of the person.
Hormones.
Right, exactly. So you're hitting on it. Generally, sex is the biggest determinant of what makes a voice sound quite different. As in
good
the,
sex.
The pitch,
the voice is usually higher.
Yeah. Bad sex.
Bad sex is more like
I don't know. My pitch just drops to an inaudible pitch when I have good sex.
That's not. Never. Sure.
Oh. I'm in the middle of you two.
What's your sex voice, Luke?
You ever had sex with a piece of toast? No, so...
That's actually my shout-out line. That's how I met my wife.
So sex is one of the biggest factors that determines the sort of pitch of your voice. That's not to say it's the direct thing that influences that. I mean, you said hormones, Noah.
Yeah.
But even that, hormones aren't the thing that directly impact the difference of your voice.
What is?
It's the effect that the hormones have, right?
Ah,
the
yes.
hormones cause the vocal length. Fold.
Thickness as well. Yeah. Length and girth.
Length and girth are yes. both important here.
There's one example. Length and girth are very important.
So it's the size of the vocal folds, the vocal cords here, that makes this difference, right?
Yeah.
Males usually have larger vocal cords or vocal folds than females. And generally this exists before adolescence as well. So there will be, I guess, small differences or on average, you know, differences between boys and girls' voices even before puberty. Now, I've got here, it says that the fundamental frequency of the resulting sound, right, is averaged at about 125 hertz in men, 210 hertz in women, and 300 plus hertz in children. The more hertz, the higher the frequency, the higher the sound. Right? You understand that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it says here that high-frequency sounds reach the ears faster, and that's why, apparently, kids' voices can be so grating.
Yeah.
I mean...
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Kids' voices... And the thing is, kids' voices can be really grating, but also, if you think about it, babies' voices, which is weird to say babies' voices,
yeah.
right? Because we don't think of them as having a voice because yeah. they don't really speak. Voice,
they don't have a say.
Yeah. But voice, in a strange way, voice isn't just this... isn't just the sound that you make. Voice is usually something that we talk about quite specifically with regards to speech, and you know, and even sort of, I guess, sort of metaphorically, when we say, you know, have a voice, as in have a say. So what I'm getting here is that voice isn't just something as simple as the sound that your vocal cords make. Culturally, we've got a lot of things attached to that, and that's quite important when it comes into, you know, the actual sort of science that we're going to be getting into today.
You ever listened to a baby's cry pitched down?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
It sounds
so good.
Just like a dude. He's been like punched.
It's just, you know,
like,
what we could do right now is I'm gonna go if I pitch that up in post, I'm probably gonna sound a little bit like a baby.
That's true. And
we'll
now
see if
we'll
that works.
Listen to that right this moment. Didn't that sound like a baby?
Whoa.
Wow. I really hope that sounded like a baby.
If I know, not, otherwise.
If not, just drop in a baby sound and everyone will be like, wow, that really sounded like a baby.
So when we hit puberty, hormones cause your voice to change. Obviously, they make the vocal folds, you know, lengthen and thicken. So testosterone causes them to lengthen and thicken quite a lot. Obviously, males tend to have more testosterone in their bodies than females. Therefore, males lower voices. Yeah?
Yeah.
Very easy.
Do you know what the Romans thought was made your voice drop?
I did.
Oh,
go
is
on.
It your balls weighing
yeah.
your vocal cords
thought,
down?
Yeah, when your balls drop, they thought that they were like weights that pulled on the vocal cords and made them lower. Also a misunderstanding of how pitch works, because pulling on the vocal cords would make them higher.
Yeah.
Double mess up there, Romans. unless they pulled on them slowly and the vocal cords lengthened
yeah.
and then they would be lower. Maybe only one mistake there, Romans.
So the differences in vocal folds. So girls' vocal folds will grow about 3 millimeters during puberty. Boys will grow about 10 millimeters during puberty. And this is just down to testosterone. There's also genetics as well that influences how your voice sounds. That's why, you know, voices can kind of sound similar amongst families. There's a genetic element there. There's also environmental as well. You know, if you smoke, that's going to change the sound of your voice. Look at Miley Cyrus as Hannah Montana, and look at Miley Cyrus as the rock star that
yeah.
she is now. Difference in voice there, right?
Yeah.
You've got, you know, the guy that played Slinky in what is it, Toy Story. I mean, his voice, he sounds like a smoker,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
smoking, things like that. Changed, if you damage your vocal folds, or if you damage, you know, your larynx, your voice box in any way, it's going to change the sound of your voice.
I read recently that if your voice sort of becomes like Kermit the Frog, that's like for example, Jordan Peterson, or apparently one of the founders of Google as well. Apparently that's to do with like a problem with your vocal cords as opposed to it being just what your voice sounded like. I don't know if that's specifically the case with Jordan Peterson or that is supposedly is the case with one of the founders of Google, I think Eric Schmidt.
Really?
Yeah, so...
Oh, that's interesting.
Maybe if we go back and look at videos of Jordan Peterson when he's like 20, he just sounded like a normal bloke. And then at some point in his 40s, he started going like this.
Well, this is I find it difficult to listen to Jordan Peterson, and not just for the content of his speeches,
sure.
But... Also, it sounds like he's struggling to talk.
Yeah.
And that it then makes me feel like it's a struggle to listen, because it's like, this sounds painful for
you. It just sounds like everything he's saying is super emotional to me. It just sounds like it's like the most meaningful thing he's ever said.
He is on the
really
verge
cares.
Of tears.
Yeah. Right, yeah, exactly.
Anyway. Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a difference between the ones where he actually is just crying and then the ones where he's just sounds like Kermit the Frog.
Well, you've hit on the next point here, is that emotions can change your voice. Mm. Obviously not permanently. It's not like, oh, I'm feeling sad and suddenly my voice has changed forever. It's not quite how it
Unless
works.
You stay sad forever.
Well, that's actually really funny that you say that, because you can actually change your voice over time. It literally says here that though the voice will return to normal once the stimulus passes, people who are generally high-strung will often adopt some variation of this alarmed voice as their natural cadence. Like, so if you're alarmed, your voice goes like, you're, oh my god, I'm like, it's really scary, it's up here, right? Your voice gets higher when you're scared. And if someone's like, you know, a more sort of alarmed person, if that like is a consistent thing that happens, they'll start to adopt that as a more sort of natural pitch. And
Charlie Day must be so stressed.
He looks like a stressed guy, man. Like, he's like this all the time, man. Like, God! Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
Hark, the ad bell, he does sing.
He sings for Patreon, I think. If you head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys, you can get a whole host of cool things. What can they get, Luke?
Oh, blimmin' heck. They can get so many things. There's bonus episodes. You can request topics for episodes. There's an entire other show called After Dark where we discuss sort of philosophical things and just general discussion, the kind of stuff that you imagine we talk about after we've finished recording. Well, that is when we do it, so that is what we do. And lots of other stuff. What else is there?
You get your name at the end of every single SciGuys episode. You can also vote on topics. You get to choose what we do. And at the end of the episode that's voted on by our patrons, if it's your first month being a patron, you get thanked by name. By us, the SciGuys. Isn't that fun?
That is really fun. I'll use my vocal cords to say your name with a 50% probability, because Corey says half of them.
That's very true. So head to our Patreon at patreon.com/SciGuys. These different things can change your voice. Like we've said, emotional state, so being scared or alarmed, higher voice, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
If you're feeling a little bit, you know, horny, that sort of sultry
Stop.
Voice it drops. But what I'm saying, like, voice conveys, like, different tones of voice convey different things.
Yeah. Horny voice. Oh yeah, you know horny voice.
I don't have a horny voice either.
I don't know what you're talking about.
What we're getting at here is that your voice can be modified not just by physical things, you know, through your life and development, but also sort of instantaneously in the moment through things like emotion. You can have it changed through damage, and also if you use a sort of voice often, you know, if you're like switching into that higher sort of register,
like if you're a YouTuber
or if you're playing Elvis Presley,
yeah, you might get stuck in that sort of voice. Now, these are all very important foundational concepts. That is how sort of the voice can sound different. There are also a couple other things going on there as well. Like, you know, there's one example that is in the room right now. One thing that can change the sound of your voice that is, you know, temporary, perhaps seasonal, happens pretty much to everyone at
Being
some point.
Being ill?
Exactly, there. Yeah,
I
there
have
you go.
A blocked nose.
So, Noah, why don't you come a little bit closer to your mic and just start...
Oh, that's not what... I don't think that's what we wanted.
So, Noah, bring your face a little bit closer to the mic and just say a few sentences. Lots of things with N's, M's, these sort of letters in them.
Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down.
Now, you can...
Something with M's and M's. I'll hurt you.
You can hear that Noah's voice sounds a little bit different. Probably got, maybe you've got a blocked nose. Maybe you've had a bit of a sore throat or something.
I just come off tour.
That's it. So your voice has been used quite a bit. So it's feeling a little bit rough. So you're dropping into a kind of lower bit there. You can feel that kind of like a little bit of vocal fry.
Oh,
kind
that's
of like,
just how I speak.
Not necessarily
that's
lower,
just,
but
you know, I'm just always down here.
You've got a bit more
here.
Vocal fry because it can be sometimes easier to kind of drop into that. Your nose is a bit blocked. You can hear that in his voice. And we know all these things, right? Sort of instinctively. Like we know, or intuitively rather, we know the differences or what these sort of different sounds mean just through experience. And obviously there are different reasons for those. So Luke, if you were to try and talk right now, just give me some talk into the mic.
Hello, I'm talking into the microphone for Corey.
Now say the same thing again whilst holding your nose.
Hello. I'm talking into the microphone for Corey.
Point is that there are, it's not just like, you know, it's not just this stuff down here in your neck area that's going to change the sound of your voice. Holding your nose like this is going to change the sound of your voice.
Also, I had a vocal coach for like 5 sessions. Mm. And when I did my warm-up, she told me to put my tongue as far forward as possible because it opens up the back of your throat. But really? Like the difference between going like, like even just like sticking your tongue forward changes it.
I remember hearing something, I can't remember what it was. I think it was if you're trying to sing either really high or really low, I think to put your head down. I can't remember which one it is, but if you're trying to sing like in one of the ways, if you put your head down a little bit, it can make it easier to reach a certain note. There's all these weird little things that if you actually look into this and study it, like vocal coaches know so much about how the sound sort of propagates in your head or resonates around your head and what those changes are. It's so, so interesting. We could maybe do an entire episode on that at some point.
I was going to say there's even like, because like a lot of trans people get voice training, like trans women will get voice training to try and make their voices higher, or trans men will try and get their voices lower. But it, so much of it is just depending on like where you resonate your voice. Because like some people speak from their throat, some people speak from their chest, some people speak from like down lower.
Exactly. I was watching a TikTok just earlier today. It just randomly came up. And it was someone who was a trans voice coach who taught people to make their voices sound more masculine or more feminine. And they demonstrated a more masculine voice and a more feminine voice without changing the pitch of their voice at all. So can you explain what pitch is at all?
Well, pitch is like how high or how low a note is. Right?
Yeah, exactly. So without changing the pitch. Now, we would think of a masculine voice as being a lower voice and a feminine voice as being a higher voice. So if you can make it sound more masculine or feminine without changing the pitch, that means that there's other things, other qualities of these voices that are associated with masculinity and femininity.
Yeah.
And it was literally just where you were sort of letting your voice sit in your mouth, you know, or letting your voice sit in your head. There was a sort of more, I guess, a brighter tone to the sort of feminine way of talking that was sort of more melodious, that wasn't as, I guess, sort of monotone as the masculine way, and kind of bringing all of the sort of tongue and teeth and lips sounds right to the front of the mouth would make it sound more feminine. And the difference is mad. It's really, really interesting how much you can change without actually changing the pitch.
When you go out for like a drink or a party with Corey and someone starts being rude, Corey becomes a different person and he talks way lower. What's up, man? And way lower and way more like a lot less like...
expressive.
Melodious, exactly like you were saying. And that's why it reminded me of it, is that you're like, you're projecting this like image of like, don't flip with me.
Well, this is the thing. We'll get into this more later on. I'm really glad you brought this up. There's a whole section about this towards the end. Yeah. So if this is remotely interesting to you, very much wait until the end for this, because it's a really, really interesting part of the conversation, I think. The next question I've got for you, before we really get into the nitty gritty of the gay voice, as it were, is the question... what is it that makes a voice sound gay?
It's more expressive. It's usually higher. There's more, just stereotypically, like lisping.
Stereotype, yeah.
Just more expressive, I think. I feel like a lot of the way that people read masculine voices is that they're, like, more monotone. And they're more in control. Whereas, like, people view... people will comment on my videos being like, oh, you talk like a girl. You're so expressive. And because I, like, move my hands. Mm. And because, like, I tell stories and I don't just speak in one, like, pitch.
Yeah, you've hit on it there pretty exactly without specifically saying it. A gay voice, and we're talking about men here, right? So a gay voice is generally when a man uses a more feminine sort of sounding voice, or sounding not necessarily just in the pitch, but also, as we were saying, in the sort of melodical, the delivery, all of that sort of stuff. A gay voice sounds like that. And you mentioned something else there as well that wasn't to do with sort of the sound of the voice, but more with the enunciation.
Oh, like a lisp.
Yeah, exactly. So if we were to all, maybe, if we're comfortable doing this, trying to do a sort of stereotypical gay voice to demonstrate, because it's come on, it's a bit of fun.
I have sex with men, so I can do that.
No, so exactly. So if we're going to talk about a lisp would be this. So when you're trying to produce those sibilant S sounds, you don't have a clear S sound.
You silly sausages.
You have your tongue intruding
upon
the...
having a sausage.
Exactly.
Your silly little mouth.
Why is that camp?
We'll get there. We'll get there.
That's so interesting. It just is. Like, my brain is just labelling that camp voice. Don't know why.
There's an extreme of lisping, which is the the S sound sort of transitions into a th sound. So the S, letter S, is more towards a TH. That's obviously extreme, but how much your sort of tongue imposes on that S sound will change how strong that sort of lith bit. So if you talk like this,
like Louis Spence,
that's a stronger lith. Exactly.
Or Jonathan Ross.
Jonathan Ross. So that's a speech impediment.
Jonathan Ross doesn't have a lisp necessarily because he's got the issue with the R.
Ross.
It's
an impediment.
Ross, Jonathan Ross.
Right. So, yeah. But he was always called Camp as well.
Yeah. Just,
he was like a married man with a wife.
Yeah.
But he was Camp. And it's difficult to say. I think it's in part because of the R's.
Yeah.
And also, he also just has a more expressive voice.
So this is what I was about to say. So if I'm about to lift like this, so if I'm talking like this with a lift.
I don't think that makes you sound gay.
Exactly. So this is what I'm saying. So if I'm talking with a lift right now like this, in this voice, it's not going to sound like I'm not going to sound stereotypically
gay. No, you're like the nerd character from an American kids movie.
Yeah.
So if I want to sound like the nerd character from a stereotypical American movie, you want to take your nose and make your voice a little bit more nasally. So you want to bring it up here like that. And with that,
I love the quadratic equation.
I like the quadratic formula. Oh, Lisa Simpson, will you?
Like, things like that. Right. That is how you make it sound more like that. See, and so the lisp itself isn't gay. It you know, or the lisp itself obviously isn't gay, but the lisp itself isn't what makes a voice sound gay.
Yeah.
It's that. With the sort of like more like fanciful way. So if I talk like that, like, hey, honey, how are you doing? Okay, okay, sisters.
Corey also has sex with men.
This is actually how Corey talks. Up on. That's why he's like, I don't know why he puts this voice
that's
on.
That's his actual sex voice.
Hey, Noah.
That's what he's been hiding.
I say, hey, sisters, every single time that I have sex. So, and you can do it without the list. So I can talk like this and like, oh my sweetheart, like no, sweetheart.
This is what you meant by
honey,
a horny voice.
Yeah, this is if it's making you horny, look.
So, oh yeah,
like you can talk, and this is why you know online you can sound very different because you know when you're presenting something, there people tend to go maybe a little into higher pitches as well. I mean, on YouTube, you might notice that a lot of people speak with quite a high voice. If you meet me in real life and I'm not on, as in I'm not acting as though I'm on camera, I will switch very naturally into my normal off-camera voice, which isn't like reaching quite the high heights of this or, you know, going all over the place as much as I do here. I'm very much being expressive, and that can come off as well as being a little bit more gay.
Free.
Yeah, a little bit free. Like this is, you see it with straight men as well a lot in TikToks as well. If a man who is heterosexual is speaking with, you know, his the sort of a high range of pitch, people will be like, sus, fruity, or whatever the thing is nowadays.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's get into the lisp, right? Do you think there is any actual scientific basis or statistical basis behind the stereotype of gay men having sort of lispy voices? Like, do you think that's just an association?
No.
Really?
I don't. I think that it's probably a almost like a character. It's a caricature that is done in media, and then some people then either for whatever reason they do that or they want to do that, and that's the way they become, because, you know, we change how we act to emulate things we think are cool or whatever. But I would say that statistically, I don't think the majority of gay men will sound like that.
I think a lot of it is, like, based on the people you're around. Because, like, even, like, I speak in a gayer voice than I did like 4 years ago because I was trying so hard to sound masculine.
Mm.
And then all my friends ended up being gay and we all have our own little lingo and our own little quirky thing. So I think a lot of it has to do with just like who you're around rather than your sexuality actually changing how you speak. Like if you're in a space where there's a lot of people that are speaking a certain way, you're more likely to pick it up.
I like how smart you both are. So I found a couple studies. I'm going to talk about one specifically here with regards to the lisp. So this study looked at that stereotype. They had two clinicians who were unaware of the specific purpose of the study. So it was essentially kind of double blind, right?
Yeah.
So they took these two people. And I'm like, okay, we're not going to tell you exactly what the study is about. So what we need you to do is to study study all of these voice recordings we've got. So they had audio recordings of 175 gay males, 100 heterosexual males, and 100 heterosexual females for the presence of, and you know, they analyze it for the presence of lisping. Now they had a standardized text that they had to read, and so the two clinicians would listen to those recordings and analyze it for how much of a lisp there was there,
yeah.
Right? Now they found in gay males that there was a significantly higher prevalence of lisping than in the heterosexual males and females. Now, if you break down those groups, you find out that actually in sort of two different age groups of the gay males, there is a higher prevalence of lisping in the younger group and a sort of lower prevalence in the higher group. And when I say a lower prevalence in the older group, with sort of respect to each other. So younger gays are more likely to lisp than older gays are. Now, if you look at this in some other ways as well, they didn't find the age of coming out had any influence on lisping. They couldn't find any sort of like reasoning behind this. They said that the origin of high prevalence of lisping in gay men needs further investigation. Also, bear in mind, this was a study with 175 gay people in it, right? So it's not that big of a study.
Yeah.
And as well, it could be localized to certain areas.
Yeah, I was going to... I'm not a scientist, but just if they're just like, yeah, we couldn't find any reason, it's just like, it's probably just because the older gays growing up in a more homophobic society, if they did have a lisp which people thought made them sound gay, they'd be trying harder than people growing up in a more accepting society to be hiding it.
Yeah, no, you're right. And another thing as well is that what they did in the study, they didn't have any bisexual people involved. They made sure of that, which is something that's, no, it's good, I think, in that you don't want to muddy your results.
Yeah.
The thing is, the gay lisp, if you look at bisexuals as being somewhere between gay and straight, which is the best way of looking at it, but
definitely not.
No, it's not. But if you're going to have that view, if you're trying to standardize it, then you would want to get rid of anyone that's bisexual, which is, I think, a really smart move on this. And they also took out anyone who studied sort of speech pathology, that sort of stuff.
Cool.
Anyone who might have been taught to get rid of a lisp.
Yeah.
Right? So there's, and bear in mind, lisping, that doesn't mean like this. It could be the slightest sort of
little twinkle.
Less sort of sibilant S's, less clear S's.
I have a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Is there, this might be a very silly question, is there any difference between a lisp that you have for, I don't know why you have a lisp, like a developmental reason or like because of the shape of your tongue or whatever, like a structural or like ingrained reason why you have a lisp? Or are some of these gay men putting on a lisp as like an emulation of a stereotype or a person they've seen or like because they, I don't know, whatever. Like, is there two groups of people, some with real lisps and some who are putting on lisps?
I think, well, that's an interesting thing to say because I've noticed that sometimes I will not put on a lisp, right? And I think that's a difficult way of phrasing it, right? Putting on a lisp implies almost an intentional thing.
Voluntary or involuntary,
yeah,
I suppose.
Well, no, because voluntary, again, implies intentional. Sometimes I'll notice that I'm putting on a bit of a lisp, but it's not intentional. I'm not thinking, oh, I'm going to put on a lisp. I slip into that way of talking.
You do.
And I notice it and I'm like, cut it. I want to pull that back.
Yeah.
Now, It's not like I don't know how to pronounce my S's or that if I'm not paying attention, I'll stop pronouncing them sort of, let's say, correctly. It's just in this sort of mode that I have of speaking, of the number of different modes of speaking I've got, one of these involves slightly more of a lisp.
Yeah.
So
it's when
I'm sure
speak more Scottish.
Really?
Yeah, it's when you speak more Scottish, you do that.
When I speak more Scottish, I find that I don't have as much of a lisp. I find it's when I'm going more into a sort of... a campy way of talking.
Yeah, it's when he's doing his little campy thing he does.
If I'm doing a little bit of a campy thing, so sometimes I'll talk on side guys, and I'm like, and I can feel my tongue.
Yeah,
I can feel the space between my
lips
when I'm the space between my teeth that my tongue is filling when I'm saying some of my S's, and I consciously try to pull that back. But yeah, and it's I'm glad we've brought all of this up. So what to take away from this study is that yes, there could be a higher prevalence of lisping amongst gay men. And Luke, to get back to that question of yours. Now, okay, yes, there may be some situations where you've got a tongue that is too big sort of for your mouth. Like, you know, Jamie Oliver, for example, he's got a big tongue, right? And that's not to be rude. But like
that's why he's so good at cooking.
Thing.
That's one of his things.
He's got all those taste buds.
Yeah, like, you know, hating children, being happy with sweets, and having a big tongue. Those are the two things that we know about Jamie Oliver. No, he tries to do good work. He's just very flawed in the execution. Now... he has a tongue that is a bit big for his mouth, so it might be difficult for him to overcome a lisp or to speak without a lisp, right? I'm not sure as to whether there are people who literally have physical reasons that mean they are incapable of producing sounds clearly, you know, or correctly. I'm putting my quotes correctly, right? I'm not terribly sure of that, but I would say from the rest of what I've read here, it would seem that a lot of these lisps aren't necessarily physical limitations. And if you think about it, speech therapy existing would suggest that there is a non-insignificant number of people who have speech impediments that only have speech impediments through the way that they have learned to talk rather than any physical limitation.
Yeah, I guess what I'm asking is, like, can somebody with a lisp who speaks with a lisp voluntarily speak without a lisp? And then can somebody who is sort of speaking with a voice that's tied to, as a separate thing, can somebody who's speaking with a voice as part of their character, as part of who they are, as part of how they present themselves, can they voluntarily speak without the lisp? And is there a difference between those two groups?
It must just depend on, like, why they're speaking with the lisp in the first place, or if they are aware that they're doing it.
Or are lisps just more prevalent among gay men?
See, this is... so
they have the same cause.
I think we can maybe try and get to an answer to that a little bit later.
Yeah.
But to answer some of it, the idea that you could sort of choose to not speak with a lisp, that... if you've got a lisp, that doesn't mean that you're incapable of making the sound.
Okay.
So if you say, like, it's more about, if you think about speech, right, it is incredibly complex. A baby goes from going ba ba goo goo ga ga, as in stringing together an open vowel and, or, you know, stringing together a vowel and a simple consonant sound, usually like a ba, a da.
Yeah.
It's very simple of the, your sort of plosive, your plosive sounds or your, you know... like the very simple consonant sounds. You string those together, ba ba da ba da, ma ma da da, all of these things, right? Bo bo ba ba. That's how babies talk. Within the space of about a few years, babies go from that to speaking full bloody sentences. It's insane. And if you think about when you're talking, do you ever think about the sounds that you are making?
Not really.
No, you read an S on the page and your brain goes...
yeah.
So let's say that when you were learning to talk, right, you learn to make the th sound instead of a s sound.
Yeah.
It's going to be really, really difficult to pull yourself out of making the th sound automatically. That's why speech therapy can be really difficult.
Mm.
And there are people who have speech impediments who, if they were to sit and focus and think, could physically be able to make that sound and read and say a word, you know, in a more correct way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the amount of conscious effort they need to put into doing that.
I guess I just don't know anything about lisps.
I think a lot of it is just like humans, unless they're told specifically to do something in this specific way, they'll just do it in whatever way comes natural to them. Like even my cousin, who's like 10 now, he had to have speech therapist when he was younger because he kept rolling his R's. It's just this,
really?
Which is really, it's a really weird thing.
So he's, rolling the R's would be to make a more sort of sort of that.
He's just this little Irish boy. There's no reason for him to be rolling his R's. He used to call my grandpa Gra-gra.
And
he
had wow.
To go, yeah, it was so weird. Like he went to speech therapy for that, and it's just like he just ended up speaking like that.
So like a proper sort of Spanish like.
Yeah, and there was nothing. There was nothing wrong with him, like physically.
Oh wow!
It was the way that he spoke.
Exactly. So what I'm trying to get at here is that these sort of, let's say, speech impediments aren't necessarily down to physical limitations, and we'll get into more specifically why that sort of voluntary involuntary dichotomy is maybe not the best way to look at it. So that's the lisp. We found out that according to this one study at least, the stereotype of gay men lisping more than the general population isn't necessarily, you know, isn't necessarily entirely untrue. But realistically speaking, it might not be down to anything other than that being the way that gay people talk.
It's environment, isn't it?
Environmental. It's... you pick it up from your environment.
Yeah, it's
right?
Like I started saying slay.
Yeah.
I didn't try and say slay. Just all my friends started saying slay, and I was like, slay. And
exactly.
That's just part of my vocabulary, even when I try not to say it.
Exactly. So we've done the list. Let's move on to pitch, right? So in a 2003 study that was at the University of Toronto, they separated recordings of 25 diverse voices into the ones that sounded gay and the ones that sounded straight, and people picked up on features of the gay stereotype, and those were voices that were, as I said, higher and more melodious. And essentially, basically, you've got a man who speaks higher, more melodious, sounds more feminine. Feminine voice man sounds like a gay voice, right? Now, there were some other small studies here and there. I also looked at a study that looked at, quite a few people, more than 25. I think maybe nearing up to 100 or so. I, I, off the top of my head, but I've looked at a few different studies, and the kind of consensus is that, okay, melodious voices, feminine sounding voices, that's what makes a voice sound gay, right? That's what, if you hear that, you think that's gay. But also, that's not necessarily true of people, right? You can't sort of hear a high melodious voice and be like, ah, that's a gay person. In fact, they had people listen to people's voices and try to determine whether they sounded gay. So let's say you had 100 men, you know, some of them were gay, some of them weren't gay, and you just have them say the same sentence, right? And you have other people listen to that and try and decide which one of these men is gay. But 60% of the time, they were correct.
Yeah, I was going to say, did they have like a high rate of accuracy in guessing gay people?
No,
60% is
better than chance, but not much.
Not by much.
There's something there, but not much.
Exactly. So it's not really predictive. This idea that having a higher, more melodious voice is something that is indicative of gay people, but there might be sort of more reasons behind that, right? So why do you think that that gay men might, you know, appear to, or there might be a stereotype of gay men having that kind of voice, that melodious higher voice? What do you think might lead to that?
Maybe it would be because they're gay, they don't feel the need to fulfill the stereotype of being a masculine man. So yeah, that might be it. So they don't feel as much pressure to speak in a way that's stereotypically seen as masculine because they don't feel the need to fill that role.
Or specifically want to differentiate themselves.
Yeah.
Like almost like a rejection of that role.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let me jump in really quick as well, because I've got another study that looked into the gay voice and what this person found. And it wasn't a huge study, but what they found was that the stereotypical gay voice, the similarities between gay men's voices, wasn't necessarily the pitch and the sort of melodious aspect of it. It was just a more contemporary Pan-American accent was adopted by the gay people in this study. And apparently it was sort of a slightly more, I guess, fanciful, sort of a stylish sort of way of talking. And that's how that was picked up.
So I just feel like a lot of like gay lingo comes from like African-American vernacular English that kind of started in America in like gay ballroom scene. So it would make a lot of sense that like across the world there are gay people that are emulating that because that's maybe the representation they've seen.
Exactly. So what I'm kind of trying to bring together here, the picture I'm trying to build in your mind, is that this isn't a case of choice or not choice.
Yeah.
A lot of it is to do with an environment, right?
Yeah.
So when you look at straight men that have the stereotypically gay voice or gay men that have a stereotypically straight voice, what you find is that this is more down to their upbringing and the environment that they're in. As in, if you're raised around more women, you might have a more melodious voice like that, because that's how you learn to speak. Those are the people that you were around. And something that you brought up earlier, Luke, about me is quite pertinent to this discussion. Do you remember what it is?
Well, you're probably referring to when I said that if you go drinking with Corey and someone's being basically a dickhead, Corey being a tall man, not afraid of confrontation, will change his voice to be like, "You're right, mate. What's going on? Why are you being like this?"
Right. And what I find interesting about that is that you say, I'll change my voice.
Yeah.
Now, that implies some kind of intent. And I remember when I used to work in an office, Noah would sometimes hear me using my work voice at home, and he'd be like, "You don't talk like that. Why are you talking like that? Why are you trying to make your voice sound different?"
The first time I remember you doing it was when we went to Wagamama's, and we got to the front door, and you'd be like, "Table for four, please." And I was like, "Who the hell is this man? Who is this guy?"
Of all the people I know, you change your voice in situations more than anyone.
Yeah, and it's not intentional.
You're in country as well when you're 16,
like a chameleon.
17. Yeah,
so it's amazing.
And so this is what I think is really interesting. It's the concept of code switching.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily intentional. I can do it intentionally. I can switch into my more Scottish accent when I want, but I kind of learned when I moved down that I need to talk more like this because English people don't understand me otherwise, and they'll make fun of me if I talk the way that I normally talk.
Yes, we will.
You say silly words regardless of whether or not it's in a Scottish accent.
Yeah, but I pronounce them silly in a Scottish accent as well, so then it's a double way to make fun of me, right?
Not only
do I use words like illustrious, I also say them like illustrious.
This is proving fruitful. I have a quotes list of Corey from when we first started dating, and half of them are just like, "Oh, this is proving fruitful." It's like, why?
Because it was
It was.
So my point here is code switching, and that's kind of why I wanted to bring you on for this episode as well, Noah, because you've got a kind of unique perspective to that.
So obviously, I'm a trans guy. So when I was younger, before I started testosterone, I was really insecure about my voice and I felt like it sounded feminine because it was high. So I would try and speak in a more masculine way. I'd try and get a bit more like grit there. And then when I started taking testosterone, there are a lot of people watching my testosterone updates and I felt self-conscious that my voice wasn't dropping as fast as I wanted it to. So even in my testosterone updates where I'm like, hey, this is my voice and I'm 1 month on testosterone, I would purposely make that try and sound deeper, even though that completely defeats the point of like doing a voice timeline. Yeah. But I think it's a very common thing within the trans community. Like there's a bunch of trans guys that will like speak as low as possible and it just damages their vocal cords and it comes across as unnatural, but it makes them feel more comfortable. And it's the same with like trans women where they're like, they go through like phases where if they're doing voice coaching, their voice will get gradually higher and higher and higher just by the way that they're speaking.
As well, I think the important thing here as well is that it's not just higher and lower.
I think
that's the thing that you can not tell necessarily, but if someone has had voice training from a professional, they very much will sound different to someone who is just trying to make themselves feel more comfortable.
Abigail Thorne. If you watch Philosophy Tube, like her voice has changed so much.
Insane, honestly. And like I genuinely think it's so interesting.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just the knowledge that if I wanted to, I could go and learn how to make my voice sound more feminine and I could just do that voice when I wanted and no one would know and I could switch back and forth.
Yeah.
Like that is just something that we're capable of. But we have this thing in our heads where we think, yes, this is what man voice sound like.
Yeah.
This is what woman voice sound like. But actually, what we think is the sort of determining factor for masculine and feminine voice is not the only factor. And so we can be tricked in multiple ways.
It's also like you were saying, it's like it's not always voluntary or you're not always aware of doing it. Mm. Even like, I mean, like everybody does it. Like if they're going into a shop, they're like, if you're being really nice to like a shopkeeper, you'd be like, oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Like it's not just doing it on purpose.
Exactly. And for me, that's what I kind of wanted to point out, that I just did it again there. I went a little bit more Scottish. When I'm going out in public and I'm talking to someone, or if I was talking to someone that I'm working with or talking to a stranger, or the other day the Virgin media man came to, you know, sort out our internet.
Yeah, you're right,
and I'm like, all right, man.
You're right,
oh, cool. No, sorry, don't worry about it.
Thanks for Wi-Fi.
I can feel that down here. This is a comfortable range for me. I remember like when you first heard this, you were like, you're making your voice sound lower. Me making my voice sound lower. And it's like, really, I'm really forcing it down here. Me sitting talking like this. Down there, that's my comfortable where my voice sits. But also up here is a brighter, higher, like more head area that it also comfortably sits. I have different places that my voice sits. It feels comfortable.
That one does not sound comfortable.
I have different places that my voice sits and it feels comfortable. This is a really comfortable place for my voice to sit, and I actually really like it being here. It just feels nicer to talk through. But there's different ways that it talks. There's different ways that it sounds, rather, and I'm not always necessarily consciously in control of that. So I have a hypothesis for why we might be seeing this sort of thing where, you know, you might see gay men being slightly sounding more camper or slightly farther along that sort of camper end of the spectrum of voice sounding when compared to straight men. And I reckon it's probably got something to do with the fact that when you're around straight guys, there's kind of like the masculinity thing there going on, right? It's sort of competitive masculinity. And if you deviate from masculinity in any way, you are targeted. Yeah. Not in major ways, necessarily. I'm not saying they're going to beat you up if you sound... No, I'm not saying that...
I mean,
that if
you're around, they do.
They can, but I'm saying that they're not necessarily going to beat you up if you sound a little bit higher.
Yeah.
But if your voice... When your voice cracks as you're a teenager, or even as you grow up, you get the piss taken out of you for it, right? Yeah. Any deviation from, like, kind of monotonous like that, is seen as different and is sort of targeted. So it makes sense that straight men are gonna more sit in that kind of monotonous, like, I'm sitting here voice than the more sort of like all over the place voice that, you know, people who are more liberated might use because they're not sort of confined by the thing of masculinity.
I remember when Tom Daley came out and my dad was like, oh, you know, he's just putting on that voice now. Like, he didn't have that voice before he came out. And I'm like, do you not think that he didn't have that voice before he came out because he was worried about being outed or worrying about being targeted?
But this is the thing. This is the key point here. The framing of it, right? He didn't have that voice before he came out. He had both of those voices.
Yeah.
In the same sense that
probably
your dad has both
it.
Of those voices.
Yeah.
And, okay, for example, straight men are rarely going to be in a position where they're probably going to feel comfortable to, like, you know, be a bit all over the place. And especially when they're younger, you're going to be taught more to kind of talk like a man. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, implicitly, not necessarily sort of explicitly, Luke, talk more like a man, but...
It's so funny. I never felt the need to talk like a man.
Yeah.
Like, I just never cared.
Fair enough.
Which is why people might say your voice sounds a bit more cat.
That's why they said I sounded gay, probably. Yeah. That's probably actually why.
But that's it. Yeah. See, you get told you sound gay, which trains boys to sound straighter, right? So you want to sound straighter. And what I want to get across here is...
That's so silly.
It's very silly.
Is that men's natural voices are not monotonous, right? If you speak more, like, you have the capability of not doing that.
Yeah.
Right? And it's just kind of how you've trained yourself to speak. And when we get into the concept of a sort of a lisp, right? Environmentally, if you're around people who are talking like that and you start to emulate them a little bit more, you might sort of subconsciously start to have a slightly less clear sibilant S.
I feel like that's the case in like so many different situations. Like even like we went to America for 6 weeks for tour last year.
Oh God.
And by the end of that tour, I wasn't speaking in an American accent, but like because of the people I was around, like say for example, there's these crisps called Tostitos.
Oh, Tostitos.
Tostitos. And it's Tostitos is how I'd pronounce it in my accent. But because I was around so many Americans, I was like, oh, just pass the Tostitos.
Tostitos,
like,
yeah.
It's like that you change even subliminally, like without even realizing
this.
It
is what I tried to explain with the sort of change of accent. In moving down to England, my accent changed, not necessarily intentionally, but just through sort of trial and error. Very sort of very subconscious trial and error. People make fun of you for this. People call you gay for that voice, or people ask you, what did you say when you say something in an English accent instead of saying it in a more American way?
Yeah.
Instead of going through that all the time, you kind of will start to switch it to being more the accepted version.
Yeah.
And I think what we do is that we forget that we are very malleable. Right, like what we are is not set or absolute or constant necessarily. It's very much influenced by the environment that we're in. So, you know, like the gay voice, does it exist to an extent? Yes, but not because gay men are fundamentally different from straight men in any way. And also, the gay voice doesn't exist just in gay men.
Yeah.
It exists in like all men.
Yeah.
It's just a case of whether you are sort of trained or whether your natural sort of way of talking, you know, or your sort like, of most comfortable way of talking is to be that less monotonous or more monotonous and less melodic, or the sort of more melodic changing the pitch more often.
Yeah, Valley Girls, like LA Valley Girls, I find that they sound like they have a gay voice.
Yeah.
Because they'll be using like loads of vocal fry and they'll be feminine and the way that they like enunciate stuff. Like it sounds like a stereotypical like camp voice. So it's not just like gay men that have this voice. I think it must just be like environmental.
Exactly. And you hear things like, you know, that very posh. Okay, Chris Eubanks.
Yeah.
All right. Chris Eubanks.
Oh, well, no, he had vocal coach.
He had vocal coaching, yeah. which makes him sound like
entirely
the most
different.
softy, poncy man.
Yeah.
But that's got nothing to do with anything about him or his sexuality.
He's a boxer. He beats the hell out of people and has sex with women. Like, he just speaks like that.
He just had vocal training that made him sound like this.
Yeah.
And we have these sort of connotations that we draw from that.
Yeah.
And you know, we were watching this video, the three of us, last night. And Luke and I agreed on something and you disagreed. It was a gay man and a lesbian. And the question was, which of these two was more masculine? They were deciding between themselves which one was more masculine. I said that they were exactly as masculine as each other. You said that the lesbian was more masculine than the gay man.
Yeah.
And what I said to that was, no, if you look at them and look at how expressive they are, their voices and all of that stuff, they're both as masculine as each other. It's just when you see masculinity coming from, you know, a woman, it almost makes it seem more masculine than when you see sort of masculinity coming from a man. So the man was quite feminine and the woman was quite masculine. And because we expect women to be feminine, we kind of saw that as... You kind of see that as being more masculine, and because you expect men to be masculine, you see their femininity as being more feminine almost. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I just still think she was more masculine.
No, that's perfectly fair. I just kind of bringing up that concept, especially because, you know, a man speaks a little bit more, like, a little bit more expressively, and it's like, oh, you talk like a girl.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? I just find this whole sort of thing really interesting. I think code switching is the key under sort of lying.
Well, so what is code switching?
So code switching, I mean, do you know what code switching is?
I do, but
why don't
you
explain
just
what code switching is?
So you could explain it.
No, you explain what code switching is.
It's changing the way you present yourself or like how you talk depending on the situation, and it's not always in your own control.
Yeah.
It's more just like, it happens a lot with like black communities, mm-hmm. where like if they grew up in like majority black communities and they go into a white space, they like subconsciously change the way they speak to become more like accepted within the group.
Yeah, mm. exactly. So black people moving from sort of black communities into a white space, yeah, we'll switch from speaking more, say if they're American, AAVE, to speaking yeah. more standard American English.
Yeah.
Because of, and that comes from sort of, I guess, persecution, right?
Yeah.
In the same sense that if I'm in Scotland, I'm talking normal Scottish the way that I grew up speaking.
Yeah, because I get persecuted for being English there.
Shut up. Because because that's just how I communicate with these people most effectively, right?
Yeah.
Whereas when I'm in England, the most effective way of communicating is the way that I'm talking now.
Yeah.
Now, that's not an intentional switch. And code switching is this really interesting thing because it is spoken about most often in the context of race, but it isn't specific to race.
Yeah.
It, you know, it could come with sort of gender, sexuality, it could almost any sort of thing. It's down to just how we communicate with others. But that is the gay voice.
Gay
the
voice.
Of the gay voice. Is there anything else you guys want to say before we move on to the end of the show?
Well, I just wondered, just expanding on your point earlier, now that you've talked about code switching and you also talked about, you know, when you're in a shop and you speak expressively, or some people speak expressively when they go into a shop. And we were talking about this idea around the gay voice and meaning that you don't need to, you don't feel as much pressure to fit into that sort of masculine ideal or whatever it is, like that masculine role.
Yeah.
I think as well as that, though, because that's specifically in gay men's dealings with straight men, for example, but mm-hmm. also in the same way that you, when you go in a shop, like I would try and speak expressively because I'm trying to show, like I'm trying to signal to the other person I'm friendly.
Yeah, you're trying to be welcoming.
I want them to have a nice day. Those kind of, I'm signaling, right? I'm signaling to somebody. I think also the gay voice, or even just using a more expressive, more friendly, quote unquote friendly, as opposed to this kind of like, all right, mate.
Yeah.
Borderline confrontational sounding voice is like, you're also signaling to the women around that like,
I'm safe.
I find myself doing that. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I very much do not use my, and I don't like coming off as gay, not because there's anything wrong with being gay. I don't like the sort of perception. I don't like the sort of the way that people change how they think about you or how they mm-hmm. view you if they assume that you're gay. So I generally won't try to advertise that. If I'm in a space with just women, I will very much speak more like the stereotypical gay person because, oh God, white women, I very much do not want to come off as scary because I feel like racially, I'm already doing that enough that I don't want to give them any other reason, right?
Yeah.
I will very much not use my, let's call it my man voice. I will very much not use like my straight man voice.
You're signaling your massive dicks to each other.
Yeah. Exactly. Or for example, you know, if someone were to come up and start causing bother, I mean, I go from my like relaxed to my, I'll draw myself up.
Yeah.
And I'll be
so
like,
funny. It's funny watching it happen.
What are you doing?
That's interesting because I do kind of the exact opposite in situations like that because I'm small. There was this one guy that was like trying to like have a go at Corey, and I'd be like, mate, what are you doing? I was just like, what are you going to hit him or something? Like, what are you trying to do?
Tactic. I play mind games with them.
I don't. I'm just like, even though it was like a security guard that pushed some girls down the stairs at one of the gigs I went to. And I was, I was like, why are you doing that? What was the point of that?
You go, I'm just a little guy.
I'm just a little guy.
Like, what are you doing?
Exactly. If they hit me and they're like 6 foot, what are they going to do? They look like an idiot. Like, are you going to beat up a 15-year-old?
Exactly.
No, I will absolutely use that to my advantage.
One other one that I heard about recently, which I love, which I did not know about, and my wife told me about, is the idea. I guess it's kind of voice. It's vocal. It's this amazing thing, which I think is so cool. Where some of the women I know, I don't know if all women do this, but some of the women I know will like, they'll like play up to like, I'm such a silly woman.
If
they just like need help with something, my phone's dead. Or like, because they're more likely to get help because the man they're asking is like infantilizing them. And they'll like play into it because it helps them get what they want. And I just think that's the coolest thing ever. I was like, oh my God, that's something I didn't know about. I think it's amazing.
I mean, I do that as well.
I'm such a silly woman.
I'm like, oh, I wish I knew knew how to wash the dishes.
Actually, Noah does it. Like, Noah does it in this meta sense where we both know that he's doing it, and I'm like,
yeah, we do.
I'm like, just ask me to do it, and I'll do it for you because I don't mind. I'd be like, now I don't want to.
If you were ever gonna get up from the sofa and maybe pass by the fridge, would you possibly be able to get my strawberries out? No problem. If not,
to kind of tie this all together, I think it's really, really interesting, right? And what I was saying at the start is really important. That voice isn't just the means of sort of, you know, just conveying flat information to someone. It's the information that is conveyed is not just the sort of content of the words that you say, but how they are said. And we have like so much of, you know, your voice influences, you know, how people interpret your words, to the point that, yeah, in a confrontational situation, I will immediately switch to a manner of speaking without even thinking about it that is going to convey to someone else, do not mess with me because I am bigger than you and I am not scared of you.
It's like the hair standing up on the cat.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, it's literally just, it's a very, very simple response of just like, I'm not scared of you, don't mess with me. It doesn't matter if I'm scared or not. And generally, I'm not scared, not because I'm brave, because I'm stupid.
Yes, actually.
I'm like, I'll be fine.
Here's Corey trying to be the hero.
I'm like, I'll be fine, whatever.
So unnecessary.
But my point is that, you know, and Noah's response is to be like, I'm a little guy. Like, you're being silly.
Are you really going to hit me? That I'm looking this cute.
You know what I mean? And it is literally just automatic responses to sort of stimuli. And I find that really, really interesting. And so if you hear about the gay voice and hear about these sort of stereotypes, instead of just dismissing it as this is outright homophobia, and don't get me wrong,
a lot of
labeling,
time it is.
No, yeah, labeling a voice as being gay and attaching negative connotations to that,
yeah,
100% homophobia. But these different ways of talking, there's actually interesting underlying sort of information there that we could really dig into. But that is the episode for today. Thank you very much for joining us, Noah.
That's okay.
Is there anything that you want people to know about that you're doing?
I'm touring the US in April. I'm playing a bunch of shows, playing one show in Toronto and Canada. That's really cool. You should buy tickets. They'll be cheap and you'll have a load of fun. So yeah, that's what you should know.
If you come at the end, you'll hear Noah in his American voice, which is, really, this will be fun for you, won't it? So there you go. Come to that.
Tickets are cheap, so you should buy one.
Well, that is almost it from us. We've got one more thing. It's a quick fire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. Gay voice edition.
Yes.
Great one, Luke. The rules for the quick fire quiz are the same as always. I'll ask one question. That's one question with the two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after finishing the question wins. What do they win, Luke?
They win.
Oh.
One gay voice.
Wow, fantastic. Luke, what is your buzzer?
Bing. I really need that gay voice.
Noah, what is your buzzer?
Yes.
And my question for you is, what is another word for the voice box?
Yes.
Noah.
Vocal cords?
That is incorrect. Oh. Luke.
Vocal folds.
That is incorrect.
Oh, yes.
Noah.
Larynx.
Ding, ding, ding. That is correct. Well done, Noah. You win a gay voice. Now you got two. So
sweet.
That is all from us. But before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with an extra special thank you to executive producers Danuto and Glitch Rabbit. And thank you for listening. You can find the full references to this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com,
honey. You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
You can follow me at NoOffence everywhere, apart from TikTok, where it's the NoOffence. And also listen to my music on Spotify. That's NoOffence.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.